Hello, and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows.
It's sort of like I didn't come up with a funny or clever thing this time to talk about, but it's...
Oh no.
It's like a thing that does other things. We basically process RPG content through a meat grinder and make it into these nice little patties of hamburger that we cook up for you, put some cheese on, put it on a bun, present it to you as a podcast, but it's actually a hamburger.
I mean, I wasn't aware that's what we were doing, but I guess we're doing this now. Hey, I don't know if we've done this in the past three episodes, but I'm your host, Lauren.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm totally your host, Ethan. I don't think we've ever said that at the beginning of the show.
Yeah. So, and if you've been listening to the past few podcasts and have no idea who we are, now you know.
Ooh, we're people.
We are real people with names. You know our names now. You can summon us in Eldritch rituals.
Oh.
Please, please use our names responsibly. Thank you. How are you doing today, Ethan?
I was doing better until I realized that I might be contractually obligated to be a part of Eldritch rituals, but you know.
So here's the thing. Like, I don't know if we're the best choice for summoning, like, unless they want to summon us to do a podcast.
Oh, we could totally do some podcasts.
Yeah, yeah, you can summon us to do podcasts, but any, like, other kind of strange things, you might want to summon somebody different. You'll probably get more bang for your summon.
Let's get to the interview.
Okay, yeah.
This week we have Isabella Jones from Dice for Brains. Hello.
Hi there, it's me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us about Dice for Brains. Are you playing D&D? Are you playing Dungeon World? What are you playing?
No, we don't play D&D. I mean, we did for the podcast of Foes. We were part of that and it was D&D, but we play the Fantasy Flight games, the Force and Destiny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because our first six seasons, they were all Star Wars themed. So we use the Star Wars system, which is the Fantasy Flight Force and Destiny, because we are all Force users, because the Force is great with us. And the current season, we are using the Harry Potter universe, and then we're testing it with Genesis.
Is Genesis, is that a new system? I don't know the Fantasy Flight games very well.
It's very similar to the Star Wars ones, as in it's more narrative-based. The die don't have numbers. They have symbols, so it's success, advantage, failure, threat. So Genesis is the system is fairly new that they released. It's a system where you can incorporate anything into it. So like if you ever wanted to play a Stranger Things themed RPG, you can use the Genesis system. They have like tips on how to do, you know, post-apocalyptic world or steampunk world. Like it serves for pretty much everything. I'm reading the book right now because I want to do a Steven Universe game.
Oh, sweet.
Because I've been so addicted to it. It's my new show with my husband. So
I feel like that would lend itself to some really cool kind of RPG things. You know, you could do all sorts of fun things with gem powers and...
Exactly. Different creatures, race half human, half gem. Like, is Steven the only one? I cannot believe that he's the only one. Like, and stuff like that. Or like, Connie, why can't she fuse even though like he's half human and stuff like that? So I've been having like a lot of weird ideas that I'm going to be trying to incorporate to the system. And Ross wants me to GM at some point anyway. So that would be a great way for me to start.
Yeah, that's very cool. So you're using this Genesis system to play Harry Potter RPGs.
Exactly, yes. And it's set in present day, and we play, like, the game is set in Florida, so we know the region, and that's what we are using. So it's the swamplands of the South America.
And is this a wizarding school thing, or are you just, like, witches and wizards living your lives in Florida?
Actually, all the three main characters are not from Florida. They are there investigating the disappearance of a monster, the totemic, which is like this nature creature that helps dark magic not attack everyone. One of the NPCs does want to build a school in the South. And why? We don't know yet. Like, his ulterior motives don't seem to be too good. But three people that by chance got in the same mission to investigate the disappearance of this creature. So my character is actually from Brazil. Like, she's largely inspired in me. So she comes from Brazil. She went to the Brazilian school that J.K. Rowling invented, which is the Castelo Bruxo. Erica's character is from New York. So she works for the MACUSA, which is the, you know, their Ministry of Magic, basically. And Kevin is a magic cartographer. So he's like there to help us with the maps and nature and where to find the creatures. And my character is the magizoologist. So she's there to, because she knows about animals.
So this is less inspired by like Harry Potter and more just in the Harry Potter extended canon.
Yes, it's actually more based in Fantastic Beasts.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, we are working with magical creatures and the MACUSA, and we are set in the United States. So definitely a lot of our inspiration is actually coming from Fantastic Beasts. But, you know, we are present day, unlike the movie, which is set in the 20s, I want to say.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's correct.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the 20s in the movie. So there is new magic laws and all of that. Roz knows way better than I do about how the wizarding community is with the nomads and all of that. I just know that my character just sees everyone like they're creatures to be studied. Nomads and magic creatures alike.
So do you find that the system lends itself really well to like doing Harry Potter kind of magic things? Did your GM have to like kind of really heavily homebrew everything, or was there already a setting kind of there for him to use?
A lot of the stuff were already there. We just had to adapt how to use magic. Like, the system teaches you how to use magic in a more like almost D&D setting. So we wanted to, I know that Ross created the rules of how magic works, how many strain points do you get, because it is a mental activity. So when you're using for battle, is this a stun spell or it's an attack spell? I know that we made operating like a skill in itself because he wants it to be very difficult. Otherwise, we'll just be like teletransporting everything everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I know that that one is really difficult. He created rules about like if we're using our wands to use magic or if we're doing wandless magic and wordless magic, the difficulty increases with that. Broom flying, I know that he also had to adapt the rules to piloting and stuff like that. But it's mostly like Genesis was really spot on stuff that we could use. We just had to adapt a thing or two, but he did his homework for sure.
And you mentioned that you work in a studio. Do you all sit around at a table and play, or are you playing kind of online in your homes?
Oh, no. We go to a location, which is at Ross's place, and then it's one table for a microphone. Each one has their own individual microphone. We have a very nice setup. You can definitely see the difference, like when you listen to the first seasons of Dice for Brains up to like season 3 or 4 when we change the equipment. So, you know, we have very good microphones. We have very good headphones. Ross has a whole editing table. He is an editing monster. He's like absolutely amazing at it. He's very good at cleaning the background sounds and putting like little sound effects here and there. And I know that he takes a long, long time editing. It's almost like each episode is almost like 25 hours of editing because he really cleans everything. Like our sound quality, like, I mean, kudos to him. It's spot on. And if he didn't leave that far, I really want to learn how to do it. And he needs help with like, he needs more people to step up with the editing, but I do live 2.5 hours away from him. So I'm the one doing the longest drive right now.
Oh, yeah.
To play. But it's so worth it to be everyone at the same table and, you know, helping each other. It's a lot of teamwork. Let's use the advantage for the group, or let's heal each other and all of that. No one is like trying to outshine each other. It's like a very safe environment and friendly, and we're just like a bunch of goofs.
Yeah, there's something really different about being able to sit all at a table together and play a game. Playing online is really fun and has lots of advantages, but I think there's something really, really nice about being able to like give people advantage dice across the table, or being able to make eye contact with somebody, like if you're having a really intense moment or something. Do you think that we can hear, this is a weird question, do you think we can hear the proximity in the podcast? Like, do you think...
Can we hear the friendship?
Yes.
I definitely think so. Like, we have only one episode that we did, which was the recap of season 6 and the second trilogy, where we did have one person in our group that wasn't in the room with us, so Susan couldn't show up, so she did, like, she showed up online, and it does affect the dynamic and quick responses and us changing, exchanging glances and all of that, so she has a little delay when we're not all in the same room. So the fact that we are all there and being playful, and it's, like, a very, tight space, so we have to be friends, otherwise it's not gonna work. It's a very small table.
So not only can you hear the friendship, but you can also hear the cuddles.
Yes, yes. We're definitely like a very nice, close group, even though like we don't really hang out much outside of the game. But like when we're there, we're all there for each other. And I think it really shows on the game dynamic and how we're always like trying to help each other and how we are always trying to screw with our GM. We always want to ruin his plans. Like we discussed about that. And it's funny because like one of the objectives of Dice for Brains, which is also like something that makes it really welcoming, is every season we want to bring a new player to the table, either be someone that never played RPG before or someone that never played with this system in particular before, which was the case for season 5. We had a seasoned player, but he had never played a narrative game. He was always like, you know, D&D, Dungeon World and stuff like that. So it's always nice to know that someone at the table, like we're all trying to get that person to like really love the game. So with me, it was the same thing. I was the new player for a while, and even though I did have some like D&D and Vampire the Masquerade experience from like 10 years ago, sometimes when I remember that, like I realize that I'm old. Most of my role playing experience was like online. Like I remember being 12 and going to chat rooms of like animes that I liked and creating a character.
Yeah, like forums and stuff. I actually, some of the first role playing I ever did was actually Harry Potter forum role play. So this is kind of like taking me back a little bit.
Oh yeah, no. I used to go to like chat rooms from AOL and stuff like that. So like yeah. Inuyasha was like one of my first ones. I'm up to this day, and that was like more than 15 years ago. I'm still friends with a bunch of the people that I used to play in those chat rooms.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, we had like our small family, the one that played my mother, who we're still friends up to this day. I still call her mom and playfully do stuff like that. So I have still a lot of friends from my internet days, like when I was very antisocial and all my friends were online and internet was only 2 hours a weekend because you paid by the hour.
Yeah.
Kids nowadays, they don't know how easy they have.
With their unlimited data plans. And actually, I live in Canada, so we don't have unlimited data plans.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But yeah, like most of my experience is actually like chat room role-playing games. And then when I was like in my early 20s, I played a lot on Tegaki, which is, it was a mix of text-based and drawing. Like you had to draw all of your replies. So it's almost like playing like a role-playing game and also creating a comic at the same time. So everyone has their own characters and you draw each other responding and creating relationships and stuff like that. So that was most of my experience in D&D from when I was 12.
That sounds really cool. I've never heard of that before. And it sounds like simultaneously really intimidating because I can't draw anything, but also very exciting.
The Tegaki community, I mean, the website closed for a while and I know that they are back and like my hand is just itching to go back to that website. But last time I got so addicted that I was like sleeping 4 hours a day because I had to spend the entire night playing. I was in like 20 different games. I had so many characters to take care of.
Oh my goodness.
The good thing is like we have like monster illustrators on Tegaki, like people that you're like, what are you doing here? You're too good. And they're all so nice to you. And like, we have people that do almost like stick figures and everyone is welcomed. We play with each other. And that's why I really love Tegaki, is like, if you were not the most excellent painter or illustrator, people are still going to be really nice to you and want to play with you, because at the end of the day, it's a lot about the storytelling.
Oh, very cool. So back to Dice for Brains. You kind of gave us, we could talk about it.
I trail off a lot. Please bring me back to the main subject.
No, that's all right. That's all right. We'll just use that for the next episode when we talk about Tegaki. You told us a little bit about the characters that you're playing, but can you go into a little more detail about who they are, what they do, what they're like, I guess?
On the Star Wars seasons, my character, her name was Mora Ayatora. Her story arc was she found out that she had the Force. She absolutely refused to believe that the Force exists. And she also, like, in 2 weeks, she learned what a lot of Jedis take years to master because she's such a smartass. A lot of the characters, they went through their discovery of the Force in many different ways. So we had the first trilogy and the three main characters. They didn't know they had the Force, and the three of them discovered together, got their saber together, lightsaber and everything. When I joined on season 4, we had a new crew. So it was me and the other two characters were not Force players. So it was basically just my character finding out about the Force and absolutely refusing to accept that it exists, up to the point where she didn't have a choice. Like, you're seeing through a wall and making people believe that you just handed them like a lot of money. You're doing space magic stuff.
Space magic stuff is the best way to describe the Force.
Yeah, so when she finally accepted that she had the Force, because her grandma basically just knocked some sense onto her, the season right after, she got sucked by like a black hole or something, and she ended up in a planet called Weak, which is canon, which is basically the D&D planet of Star Wars. So they're, you know, they have swords and they believe that the Force is magic. Like, literally, they have to use a spell book. And that's when we meet Simon, which is the character that learns about the Force, not, oh, this is magic, I'm a paladin and this is magic. It's like, you don't need that book, honey, you can just use the Force. And it was showing the many ways that the Force can manifest itself. And then the season after, it was like the path to the dark side for one of our characters, all characters getting together from the first trilogy and the second trilogy. So we showed many ways that someone can train within the Force, discover that they have the Force, and decides and how to give in or not give in to the dark side. What are the consequences of using the dark side? So a lot of the seasons were about that. You know, your decisions will affect what happens to you, because the dark side, it's not necessarily evil, but it's the one that brings more consequences.
Yeah. I just thought of a great joke.
Tell us.
Because you're talking about, it's not a good joke. Preface. So you're like, you didn't want to believe that you were a space wizard, and I, because, you know, the next game's Harry Potter, and I have it on the brain, it's like, you're a space wizard, Harry. So you should just cut that in earlier where it makes sense. Ethan, but anyway, sorry, it's been like,
sorry, I'm like rubbing the pain out of my temples. That just
yes,
that actually hurt a little bit.
Usually you do that to me.
Vengeance.
I have beat him. Vengeance.
I need more tea.
I finished my tea. I'm sad. I only have water now.
So, but yeah, tell me about these wizard characters. I want to know more about them. How many episodes in are you?
We have 4 episodes up right now. We actually, this season, we did 2 episodes of character creation because we were doing a new system, and the Genesis has like 7 steps that goes into creating a character. So you have to choose, like, it's not a race. We are all humans, but then you have like, you can be either the intellectual or the aristocrat or the normal human and stuff like that. So we have very different characters that also, like, all of them connect in a certain way. Either be 2 of the characters have the same fear, 2 of the characters have the same strength. So we have our very bossy character, which is Erica. She's the leader because the other two characters are, like, they get distracted so easily. My poor character, I play, like, an extremely timid lab rat. And it's the first time that she goes out in the field. And she's just, like, hiding in the back, doodling in. Animals, and like, I just really want to find the magical creature because people don't believe that it exists. And then we have the magic cartographer, which is like also this very curious guy, but like extremely ashamed, like scared of being humiliated or something. He's constantly trying to prove himself. Erica's character and my character both share the same fear, which is isolation. My character, because she's like always stuck in a lab, she doesn't really talk to people. And her character is because she comes from like a dark family, the Rosier, which is actually a canon Harry Potter family. And she's trying to prove, you know, not all of people in our family are evil.
I'm just like imagining, like, what's Erica's character? What's their character name?
Her name is Marceline Rosier. She is our bureaucrat. She's the one that actually works for Macusa. She comes from a rich family, so sometimes it shows, like, with that can I talk to your manager attitude? I want things to be efficient. You guys go to sleep now. We have a mission tomorrow. Her weakness is that she's anxious because she likes to be in control.
Oh, that doesn't sound, you know, relatable.
No, not at all.
Hashtag relatable content. I'm just imagining her with the, you know, this zoologist and this cartographer. And like, I'm just imagining them trying to walk through the swamp and she being like, okay, we got to get to this place. And the cartographer is like, oh, but what else over there? And then the zoologist is somewhere else. And is like, oh, but what about that thing? And she's just like trying to herding nerds, I guess, to like.
Just wait for our new episode. You're pretty spot on, actually. Our next episode to be released, something basically what you said happens. Like, both my character and Kevin's character, they have sketchbooks. And they are in a new land with new flora, fauna, and, like, new animals that she never saw before. New plants that the cartographer never seen before. And let me tell you, it's hard to make them go fast.
Oh, man, I just gotta write everything down. Guys, we need to take like a 2-hour break while I draw every last detail of the leaf of this plant that I've never seen before.
Basically. Both Kevin and I actually like start doodling while like we're in session. Like you can see that he's like inventing some plants and I'm like drawing some lizards in the corner of my sheet and stuff like that.
Well, that's really fun. I like that.
We're talking about in-person play and that's something I miss about in-person play is I like the physicality of like I'm doodling on my character sheet or the DM has given me this like physical prop to play with. To like figure out.
Yeah, we do have wands. Yeah, we bring wands to the game. So like sometimes we're just waving around. Erica is our Harry Potter savvy. So she's the one that like it's very strict when she's using the wand. Like even if we're just playing, she wants to do the right movement and everything. She looks very wizardy. I look exactly like my characters. Like I am just very clumsy with that wand. The last episode, I'm pretty sure that Ross is calling me out because I was like pointing it to my mouth. And then he's like, get this one out of your mouth. And I'm like, oh, I was just playing around. Like, I'm 5.
Oh my gosh. I'm just casting the ice cream spell. Just, oh.
Exactly. Just making my tongue feel the flavors better.
The ice cream spell. I would love like a flossing spell.
Oh, yes.
Like, brush your teeth with your wand.
Yeah. But like with magic. Like
I'm pretty sure they do it. I mean, come on.
I mean, if you watch the movies, like, you know, you can get somebody to like, you can get magic to do your dishes for you.
Prestidigitation can despoil things. It removes gross.
Yeah.
It makes things clean. Just everything's clean now, which prestidigitation is basically just, I actually have this whole thing. That year one of Harry Potter, the wizarding school stuff, is actually just learning level 0 spells from Dungeons & Dragons.
Basically,
I like that.
No, and it's funny because like Erica's character, she does everything with magic. My character grew up with like, she is from a wizard family. Her family is weird. Like even before they knew like what academic magic was, they were very like primal magicians. Because like I tried to use a lot of like the magical culture that we have in Brazil because my character's from Brazil. So in Brazil, like a lot of the older people, they believe in like healing plants. And like, you know, if you jump the waves of the ocean 7 times, on New Year's Eve, you're gonna have good luck, and they can predict the sex of the baby with weird tests. So, like, her family is all like that. It's like those that would be called witches because they do weird stuff. Because in Brazil, like, yeah, we're fairly spiritual, weirdly spiritual country. And like a lot of the weird things are just based on my grandma because she was full of weird things that she would do. And I thought it was always so interesting. Like she thought that she could find out the sex of the baby just by looking at your hand.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I've learned a few of the things. So the hand one is actually like you ask the mom to show you her hand.
Yeah.
And if she shows with the palm up, it's a boy. And if she shows with a palm down, it's a girl.
Oh, well, if I'm ever pregnant and near a Brazilian grandma, I'll know how to I'll know how to trick them.
Exactly.
I really like that you kind of added that personal touch to your character. So you mentioned before this character character is very personal to you. Is this kind of like a self-insert thing, or did you just really want to honor your family and the you know, kind of spirituality of Brazil?
It's a little bit of both. You know, just it took me way back to when I was 14 and I used to write self-inserted fanfic.
I mean, who didn't?
I found some the other day because I have like this hard drive with extremely old files, and I found a few of my old fanfics and my friend from high school fanfic, and I told her that I found out and I'm gonna send it to her mom, and she's like, I will kill you. Cut you in so many pieces.
That's like such gold though. I remember finding some of my old like poetry and stuff that I wrote in high school and just being like, it's just like there's something so wonderful about, like, I don't know, looking at this like weird stuff you created when you were a kid.
And I was such an edgy teenager, so a lot of the things are a little silly, but there are little things in there that are so cool that I'm like, I would put that in an actual book or something. Cause like, because I was like a goth edgy, so obviously I used to think that I was a Slytherin. Now I am a happy Hufflepuff. I still have a little bit of that Slytherin in me, but every test that I do sorts me into Hufflepuff. So
is that like Slytherpuff?
I'm a Hufferin, because I'm more of a Hufflepuff.
Okay.
So like my fanfic had a lot of like actual dark magic incorporated, you know, sacrifice and stuff like that. But I got two things in my fanfic that when J.K. Rowling made it canon, this friend of mine that we're friends up to this day, she's like, how the frick frack did you got that right? Number one, I knew that Snape was in love with Lily. I had a character that looked exactly like Lily, and Snape would fall in love with her because I was super into Snape.
Oh no.
Yes, I was super into Snape, but it wasn't my self-insert character. It was another one. My self-insert character had a relationship with Draco Malfoy.
Oh, of course.
And Ron Weasley. And my NPC, which was Dumbledore's son. And that's my second thing that I got right. I knew that Dumbledore was gay.
Oh.
My friend, when that turned canon, she's like, what? How did you manage to make this happen? And I'm like, because she was very into the whole like Dumbledore and McGonagall are together. I'm like, no, Dumbledore is actually married to a guy and McGonagall was the belly for them. The surrogate. That's the word.
The surrogate. Oh, okay.
She was the surrogate for his son.
Oh, wow. That's quite the headcanon.
Yeah. So my fanfic is full of that kind of stuff.
Does your character in this game, like, is there any elements from the fanfic that you wrote back then, like, in your character now?
No, not really. That character was, like, super edgy attitude, nobody messes with me. This character, physically speaking, she is me. I even, in one of the sessions, called her Isabella instead of her name, Renilda, which is still my name. It's my middle name, Renilda, which is my grandma's name. So that's the name of my character. So, but her personality in parts is similar to mine, but I am way less shy than she is. And even like when I am shy, which I actually am a lot, is a different kind of shy that she is. And I usually make characters that are like way smarter than me. Not like,
I think we all do.
Yeah, it's just like I tend to make characters that have a knowledge that I don't. Like I'm not a dumb person or anything, but it's like I make very scientific characters for some reason, and I'm like, I am very bad at stuff like that, and I don't know why I keep doing that to myself.
It's nice to feel capable of things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Especially when you don't actually need to know how to do the thing. You can just be like, so I figure it out, and because of the magic of explanation and, you know, my GM knows all the lore, we can make this work and I don't have to know science.
Exactly.
Sometimes I will do that as an excuse to learn a thing. I'll be like, oh, I'm going to make this character, you know, about Halifaxian mermaids. And then I'm going to research about Halifaxian mermaid folklore. Sometimes I like to make a character with an excuse to actually have to go learn a thing.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of books when we were preparing for this. Because, like, Ross wanted us to have, like, a certain idea already of our characters. But then we were going to build our characters in a session. And it ended up being so long that we had to cut in two episodes. But I went to the library. I got so many Harry Potter books, so many Fantastic Beasts and stuff like that. And because my character comes from Brazil and I was always so interested in that growing up, her specialty is actually Brazilian folklore and magical creatures.
I really like how your character's name, Renilda, and that's your grandmother's name, and you based it a lot on the folklore that you learned from your grandmother. Like, it feels like a really nice kind of tribute to your grandmother.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely was. She was like a pretty badass person, like my character's personality is nothing like my grandma. My grandma, first off, swore like a sailor. She was very, like, badass, hard work. Like, she was such a weird, cool grandma. Like, she played soccer, drank beer, was always did, like, heavy jobs instead of, like, somewhat girly jobs. And she, even, like, her outfit, she would wear, like, sneakers and, like, soccer shirts and, like, boy shorts and stuff like that. She was, like, and my mom said, like, I had a huge, huge tomboy phase growing up. And she said it was her fault for naming me after my grandma. So yeah, is like Renilda has a lot of elements of me. Her appearance, it's basically me. But she also like it can be like very different than me, but it's also like based on a lot of people that I grew up with. My family being like a weirdly spiritual family that believes in a bunch of stuff like ghosts and being able to predict a baby's gender. But my character is way less she's not very good with communication. She's way, way more shy, like never been into a relationship. We've been playing with the idea of, because of her personality, of making her asexual/aromantic.
Oh, okay.
Because all that she wants to do in her life, it's just like study animals, but at the same time, she wants to belong. And her being ace really comes to play with that because, you know, it's difficult for her to form meaningful relationships without people expecting more from her. Yeah. And it's very interesting because Erica, her character is very like, she's very showy and like she's the pretty one and the leader one of the group. And Erica is actually ace. So I've been like asking her for opinion. Like, I don't want to do anything offensive. I'm like, I am not asexual, but what would you like to see in a character? Because I feel like that's important. Because like a lot of times we want to do a certain type of character because, oh, how we see them. And I ask like, I want to make her ace because of this and that. Do you feel like it's a valid reason? I will drop the idea, but she's been like, I don't know. I think it's really cool. What I would love to see in an ace character, it's this or that. And so we've been talking about that, incorporating that, like not make it a main arc of the show, obviously, but like mention here and there because it also attaches to her fear of isolation.
Yeah, I really like that. And especially, you know, that you like ask your ace friend to kind of make sure that that everything is kind of kosher. And
is this how you do? Is this how you do this? No? Yes?
This is how ace people are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She gave me like a few communities on Facebook to go and check where they talk a lot about the ace and RO community. Because like a lot of times you learn about something from like the media or like people who are not actually part of the community. And like I am pretty fond of making things as close to reality as possible. So like my previous character, Amora, I made her a kind of depressive, anxious character because it's something that I can absolutely relate to. I just wanted to show like that sometimes that can be someone's strength. Like Mora, on the end of one of the seasons, she used the dark side. And the dark side actually was what saved her because she was always in that mindset. She was ready to give up and she did channel the dark side to avoid doing something that would destroy her because you have to find your strength in your darkness. So that's what I wanted to show with my character. Because like I am such happy-go-lucky when I'm with people and everything. But you know, I have depression, I have anxiety, I have a little bit of PTSD. I like to show that I try to make this my strength and then I try to incorporate that to my character as well.
That's very cool. That's very brave of you, honestly. I like that. The idea of taking this thing that people generally look down on, that sometimes we look down on in ourselves, and making it a strength and making it something that helps you in the end. I like that.
Yeah. And like, it's what Ross mentioned once when we were talking about like the light side and the dark side, is like the dark side is not evil. The dark side is just dark. So I wanted to show that even like when you are in a dark moment, you can find something to be the strength for your character. Because sometimes you are in a dark place and being in the dark place is what's gonna lift you or something like that. I don't know. I'm very open with stuff like that. And I thought it was important to have a character reflect that.
I think that's very important, especially like as these kind of actual play shows are becoming, I don't know, more prevalent. It's more than just friends sitting around at a table. Like people are looking for stories and people are looking to see themselves in stories. And something that's great about especially RPG shows is that there are so many of them and there are so many people and it's not run by a network. People can put themselves in these shows and they can see themselves in these shows, you know, like there's so much more queer representation in RPG shows than there is in like actual TV.
Exactly.
You know, and
what is that statistic? It's like 90% of D&D Twitter is not straight.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's my theory, is that 90% of D&D Twitter is not straight. And then of that 90%, 50% is ace. That's been my experience.
I feel like, and I love it, like my Twitter feed is basically like, I either follow people from other, you know, RPG podcasts or like illustrators. And I'm pretty sure like 80% of the people I follow are trans or part of the LGBT community. This session, actually, season 7 of Dice for Brains, we are all part of the LGBTQ, there's more letters, plus. All four of us are. We have an ace person, we have two bisexuals, and we have a gay, like a homosexual. Not gay. Homosexual? I don't know. I never know the proper.
it's all very wishy-washy, and there's the scientific terms, and then the terms people identify with. But that's very, I mean, that's cool. That's nice.
Russ and I, like, that's what we say, like, we're married now, so we're still part of the community, but what his, like, we were talking the other day, it was really funny. It's like, I mean, I'm with Aaron now, so, like, I am Aaron sexual. It's like, I don't want to be with anyone else, like, I understand, I'm also married. I am currently married to a guy, so, but I'm still bisexual, because if we were to break up, I would never, like, count out the idea of being in a relationship with a woman. Hmm. So, you know, and in the past as well, so I thought it was, like, it's really interesting. I mean, I'm talking about here, and sometimes we mention on Twitter, but like, we don't try to make that our selling point or anything. Like, we're not bragging about it. We don't want to be those people, you know, like tapping our own back and like, oh, look at you, so nice. You have like queer people in your group. Oh, you're so progressive. It's like, it just happens that we are, and society nowadays is like this. I did like,
yeah,
they never ask. Like, we just realized the other day, like Erica and I were talking, and then we're like, oh my god, everyone in the table right now is part of the community.
There's a lot to be said about normalizing that sort of behavior and mm-hmm. not making a big deal out of it sometimes, just so it becomes a normal thing, right? It's just a thing that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our objective is only really bringing new people to the table and making everyone in the table feel welcome, no matter if you're queer, if you're black, white, foreign, woman, man. Like, we just want more and more people to come to the table. At the end of every episode, that's always our message. It's like, nothing, like, we don't have an agenda. Our agenda is just bring new people, like, invite people. Maybe they're looking for a safe group to start and be that person for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in the past, the tabletop gaming hobby has, you know, people have an idea of what people who play Dungeons and Dragons or tabletop games are like, and that's, you know, I think that's still very there in society, even though it's not true anymore. It's good to have that kind of stuff out there for other people to see and, you know, remind them that tabletop is for everyone, because I feel like every few months there's some other kind of thing where somebody tries to say, you know, tabletop is only for this kind of person, or this hobby is only this, you know, you can only play in this one way. And we all have a big argument about it and have to remind everybody that, yeah, this is a hobby for everybody.
Yeah, and we just really try to normalize stuff like that. Like, we insert stuff in our characters because, like, we want to, or because we feel like it's going to add to the story, but we don't, like, make a point to, oh my god, I have to remind everyone that this about my character, because they need to know that I made my character so different. So, like, it's very nuanced, like, with my previous character, Mora. And because we're family friendly, obviously, I had to tone it down a little. Usually on Twitter is when I am a little bit more over the top, mostly because, like, we're making jokes and people just think that I'm an awful person. I'm starting to have a reputation on Twitter. Like, I say anything that it's a little bit, like, you know, weird, and people's like, oh yeah, you would. I'm like, you guys think so little of me.
So what we're saying, Isabella's Twitter is not family friendly.
No.
And a little bit weird.
No, my Twitter is not family friendly, and 90% like GIFs, like weird ones.
I'm going to go look at them right now. I'm going to find your Twitter.
I am very fluent in GIF usage. I use the weirdest things. I speak through GIFs and like weird quotes that make people think like awful things about me when I'm actually such a nice person. Don't be fooled by my Twitter. I'm like the mom of the group. Like, I said that once, and some of my friends on Twitter, they're like, oh yeah, right. And I'm like, no, really, I was that kid growing up that when my friends wanted to go out, they just had to say that I was gonna go with them, and they're like, oh, Isabella is going, so okay, you can go, you can spend the night, because I am like the good trustworthy person. But I come across as not at all. It's like when I make jokes, like I make way too many jokes about being drunk for someone that really doesn't drink that much.
back to the podcast.
I was talking about Moira. So because the show is family friendly, I couldn't point that out that much. But like, if you notice like little nuances here and there, we described on Twitter Moira as being Captain Jack Harkness with Sherlock's personality. So every creature is game, but instead of being charming, she's usually a dick. And that can be a powerful aphrodisiac, I guess.
I was just thinking your characters had really high cheekbones.
I was like, they're very British. Yeah. I said, like, if I could do accents, Moira would have a British accent, but I can't. The only accent I can do is my broken English. So she still has an accent. She still speaks different than everyone else on the table because I am the foreign of the group.
I mean, so you've been on a bunch of seasons. How long is each season? Like, how long Dice for Brain's been going on? You know, you said 6 seasons in calendar time. Is that like 6 years? Is that 2 years? What is it?
I think we are down to 2.5 years now. I joined on season 4, which was the beginning of the second trilogy. So the first 6 seasons are separated into trilogies. Yeah, so the first 3 seasons, it's the first trilogy. Then we have the second season, second trilogy, 12 episodes each season. By season 5, we started doing some, you know, after season specials. Season 6, we had episodes in between about character creation and character development, story arc. So it was a little longer. Like, we still had 12 episodes of story, but we also had like character creation, character development. So we can go through the system for the listeners to understand it better. Like, we mentioned the system, the rules and stuff, but we are very narrative oriented. So we are more worried about building a great story than, you know, playing by the rules. So for the people who enjoy the rules, we decided to make like special episodes just for that. So how we use our XP, how, you know, we use the force powers that we acquired. Roz hates me because he said that I have an ability to buy a lot of stuff with very little XP because I find all the cheap ones. And I have a talent of making Roz forget about my character's abilities. So he comes up with like a villain or something that their one weakness is the one thing that my character knows how to do.
The best. That's the best feeling. You're like, I can do this. I can save everybody.
Perfect.
He kept forgetting that Moira can see through stuff because she has farsight. And then he creates something like the villain weakness was like literally under his cloak. And I'm like, yeah, I use farsight. And then he's like, no, I forgot that. Then he broke my character's jaw.
Then you just you just see the DM like throw away all their notes. Like, there goes that encounter. Nope.
Apparently, I am the worst and the best at doing that, like ruining Ross's plans.
I mean, you just build characters really optimally, and that's awesome.
And it's funny because I don't. I was talking like the other day when we were doing like character creation and we were using XP. Like, I saw Erica choosing her talents and stuff. And I saw Kevin using his stuff. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm very focused on my character. And I just buy the stuff that would make sense for her. Not like for the story itself. Or like in the, you know, in D&D, like, oh, you get XP. You just want to get stronger and stronger and stronger. My character is just like, I don't know. My character is kind of like shitty at this. So I want her to stay shitty at this. And it's like, but you have the XP to buy this. Like, yeah, but it doesn't work for my character.
Yeah, but I just want to be really good at some things and really bad at other things.
Yeah, because I don't... I wrote way too many Mary Sues growing up, so nowadays I am way more keen to flawed characters. So Moira, she was great tactician, or like she would be very good at running from the battle and like kind of fighting from the side or sneaking without people seeing, but like she will go down with one punch. I think I used my lightsaber once. I am like, she was not a fighter. She was definitely like, I'm the smart one. I have like misdirect. So instead of fighting, I'm just gonna create an illusion of myself running to the opposite side. So the bad guy's gonna go and attack that and I'm gonna hide. And every other character, they're like, yeah, no, I'm gonna go and hit it with the lightsaber. And it's like, yeah, Moira hides. And she uses misdirect to make all the stormtroopers be very bad at, like, even worse at aiming because they believe that I am like 5 centimeters to the right.
Yeah. So just, I just want to get through a couple more questions. So if I wanted to start listening to Dice for Brains, like in your next episode, you know, because we said, you know, neither of us have time to listen to podcasts. So like, can you tell me what happens I guess, the past two episodes, like, of just this new art.
Yes.
Where are we now? What got you there?
So we're finally actually starting our investigation. What happened so far is the three characters got together. They don't know each other that well. Like, my character and Erica's character know each other from school because Renilda did do a one-year exchange program in Ilvermorny. So they know each other from school. They are there to investigate the disappearance of a magical creature, and that's a side job. The ministry doesn't know that that's what they're really doing there. What they know is that they are there to do the cartography and animal, like, magical beasts recognition after so many natural disasters and magical disasters happened in the swampland areas. So they're actually not supposed to be investigating the disappearance of stuff. They're just there to actually map the place. So they are together, they're staying in a hotel and starting their mission, and up to now we met with a few characters and we're starting to learn more and more stuff that we did not know at all that was happening in the area. Erica's character is not happy about that at all. Her anxiety is hitting, like, hard because she had a whole beautiful plan and people just keep tossing more stuff at her. She's like, I didn't know that. And that doesn't make her really happy. Much like real life, bureaucracy in our game makes everything more difficult for us.
Like, yeah. So you're on this secret mission to find. And so next episode, that's when you start going to the swamps. You start finding stuff.
Yes, we're starting to interview people and understand what's really happening, because we thought, like, just this magical creature disappeared. And now we found out that there's actually dark magic activities showing up in this area. And, you know, there are some families that are being investigated. There are some people that work for SAMS, which is the Southern Arcana Magical Society, SAMS. Ross is way better. Yeah. Well, it's a joke with the, you know, Sam's Club.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we have that happening. We find out that someone from the Sam's society disappeared, which is actually the person in charge of the nomad branch of Sam's. And so we're finding more and more stuff. And I mean, my character is just invested in finding this magical creature because it's a creature that she's been studying and wanting to write a book about. Erica's character is just really pissed off because she keeps finding more information that people are hiding from her, and she does not like that. And Kevin's character, it's basically super excited to, like, about everything.
He just wants to make maps.
He wants to make maps and learn stuff. And, you know, he's just finding everything to be, like, this super cool adventure.
All right. So what's your kind of elevator pitch for this season of Dice for Brains? Like, fill in the blank. If you like blank, you'll like Dice for Brains.
Well, if you like Harry Potter, and if you like very interesting storylines, and you don't like rules that much, you're really gonna enjoy Dice for Brains, because we're all really worried about bringing new people and bringing excellent stories, well edited, and, you know, showing a side of Harry Potter that we're not seeing in the movies. Or, you know, maybe the canon.
The canon universe. Yeah, we don't learn a lot about adult wizards.
Exactly. All three characters are actually the same age. Like, we ended up, like, getting to an accordance with that. They are all late 20s. So it's showing what happens after they finish school. Like, school is important. Like, we are very centered in that. But, like, how do they do their jobs? How wizards, they are all from magical families, so we don't have really, like, that transition from human to, you know, regular nomad to magic creature. But, you know, they're all in professions that you can find in the nomad society. It just happens to be magical creatures instead of just creatures. Like, I'm a magizoologist. We only put magi in front of the category, and suddenly cartographist, no, magic cartographer.
just think of any normal job and then add magic to it. Like, I'm a magic sewer technician, or I'm a magic cobbler.
I was literally gonna say I'm a magic plumber.
So instead of, like, cleaning, you know, human poop, you're cleaning, like, basilisk poop.
No.
Oh no.
No thanks.
It's probably all stony.
So yeah, basically, if you like Harry Potter, you like interesting storylines, narrative-based games, and people improvising and trying to figure it out how would like to be like how would it be like to live in a magical society as an adult instead of like, oh, you know, I'm a child and everything is amazing and interesting. Like, we already saw all of that, so now we're just like exploring things that we already know. Because like, we don't know, like now with the Fantastic Beasts, we're finally seeing the adult side of Harry Potter, but we're doing it before they are. Showing like how it's like to have a profession in the wizarding world and how safe is life as a wizard. Not very safe.
Spoilers, not safe at all.
Yes, and it's funny, like each character deals with everything differently. Like Erica is such a purist on when it comes to magic. Her character is literally, you can do everything with magic. And like, I forget sometimes that my character is a magician. It's like, yeah, but like, what if we have to be in a fight or something? And she's like, just use magic. And I'm like, oh yeah. I actually, like, my character is more, she tends to use more like regular stuff. Yes, she has a magical pen that takes notes for her, but she also grabs the notebook and takes the notes herself if she can.
How are we gonna fight this giant magical beast? Gun.
See, that's the thing that was in my fanfic, actually.
I'm gonna cast a spell. I'm gonna shoot with a gun.
Exactly, because see, in the fanfic, it was like, okay, when you come from a wizard family, I understand that you only know magic, but half of my characters came from, you know, the muggle world. You know about muggle stuff. Use muggle stuff.
Use muggle stuff is going to be the catchphrase of this episode.
Exactly.
Hashtag use muggle stuff. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking about Dice for Brains with us. This like opened up a whole new world. Like, I learned about a new system and about cool Harry Potter things. So I'm really excited to check it out. If somebody else wants to check out Dice for Brains, how can we do that?
We are pretty much everywhere. We are on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are on Podbean. We're on Podcast Addict. You can find us anywhere that you can play a podcast and just look for Dice for Brains. We are on Twitter at Dice for Brains, and most of our players also are on Twitter, and we're all weird. Please come tweet with us. We are on Patreon. You can find us Dice for Brains Patreon. Patreon.com/Dice for Brains. We are on, yeah, if you're one of our patrons, you can come to Discord and talk to us. So that's a nice perk. But we are also like very active on Twitter. We are weird people. Come be weird with us. And we have our umbrella, like we have our other podcast, which is Under Our Umbrella, which is Not Another Tavern. You guys should go and check that out as well. We were on Podcast of Foes. You should listen to our episode. It was on the last day and it was really funny. It's like, it's us playing D&D and me being very bad at that because I'm so focused on narrative games that I forgot how to play D&D. And if you can see, if you want to laugh at Ross because I gave my character a very difficult name for him to pronounce, he hates me. Like, now on this new season, one of the best things about this new season is I speak Portuguese and I try to make the my friends speak Portuguese in the podcast, and their accents are hilarious.
Excellent. Perfect. And so how can we find you? Is it just Twitter? Where else are you on the internet? How do I join the Isabella Jones fan club?
Oh god, so I'm on Twitter at IssaKills, ISAKILLS. I'm on Facebook, 52 Isabella Jones. That's my acting page. Can be a little boring at times. I try to geek out a little, but I am mostly myself on Twitter. I am on Instagram, again, at 52 Isabella Jones. 52 is my graduating class. That's my tribe to them because I was so happy in film school. So all of my professional stuff has the number 52. And them. And I'm on Discord. I'm pretty sure my username is Fatashka because that was my nickname some years ago. And so because I want my old friends to find me, I still go by Fatashka.
All right. There we go. Now you can find everything you want to know about Isabella.
Yes, I'm an open book. If you Google Isabella Jones, you're going to find a bunch of weird stuff probably.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And find a catchy way to end this thing. I don't know how.
Well, thank you for having me. Sorry that I trail off so much. That's my life. Rust really has to bring me back to the game a lot.
Honestly, that's what the podcast is about. It's just you talking about things you enjoy, about the thing that you do. So
yeah, this was great. I learned a lot. Had a good time.
Yeah, I'm a very all over the place person. But at the end of the day, like, I'm hoping you guys had fun because I had a lot of fun.
Yay, we did it.
Yay. We get extra XP for that.
I don't know what I'm going to put that point into, though. Maybe, like,
I'm going to try and use my extra XP to be a good baker, because I'm not. And Ross got me addicted to the Great British Baking Show.
Such a good show!
I know! And I'm very bad at baking, but now I want to bake so much. I want to make breads and cakes, and I'm, like, really bad at that. I'm very good at savory food. Very bad at baking.
I actually enjoy baking, and I'm decent at baking, and that show just makes me want to bake more.
You're probably good because you're good with numbers, and baking is a very precise science. Yes, and I'm not science.
It's really just tasty chemistry.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And I was bad at chemistry, therefore I'm a bad baker. But I'm a creative person, so I'm very good at creating savory stuff because I can just toss a shit ton of seasoning and hope for the best.
Outro time, go!
Thank you so much to Isabella for coming on the show and talking about a lot of things, all of them good. Thank you to Dice for Brains for having a cool show that we can talk about. Thanks to Jeff for arguing about Leading Tones with me to make these sweet tunes you're listening to. Thanks to Ethan for doing all the editing.
Thanks to Lauren for getting that whole outro done. Congratulations.
I did it. I only laughed minimally. I've grown as a person. Leveled up in podcasting.
So if you want to contact us with a show you'd like to see or be on the show as an expert, you can contact us at toomanyrpgs@gmail.com, or you can talk to us on Twitter at toomanyrpgs, Twitter at symbol.
Yeah, at toomanyrpgs. Or you can use the hashtag toomanyrpgs because we check that too.
Or you can talk to us directly. You can find Lauren at JL_nicegirl.
And you can find Ethan at Super Robot Bear.
Outro complete. Action pose.
Do do do.
I'm action posing.
So am I.
Okay, good. Which one are you doing?
I have like the Final Fantasy like fist pump.
Okay, so I got the one hand going up at a diagonal pointing, and the other one bent at the same diagonal but going down, also pointing in the same direction while I look.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good action pose. Man. It's too bad this is, you know, a podcast and not a visual medium. So imagine those action poses in your head.
We were painting with the mind.
Yes.
But not actual brains. Don't actually paint with people's brains. That's one, illegal, two, gross.
Yeah. Also, don't use dice made of brains. I feel like we didn't.
Or don't replace brains with dice.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we didn't like address that in the interview, but that is, I mean, don't do that.
This is being a PSA about Dice for Brains. Except go watch it. It's a good show.
Go watch it. Go watch it. But like, remember that they are professionals and replacing your brains with dice should not be tried at home. Be sure to leave a comment on wherever you found this podcast, because it's very important for other people to find the podcast. You know, leave a good rating. You can follow us on Podomatic. And then the algorithms will be like, oh, this is a podcast people like. I'm going to tell other people to watch it or to listen to it. And then more people will listen to it. And then profit. Not actual profit.
There's no profit.
No. But happy. But happiness. We will be happy. You will be happy. Bye.
Bye.